Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Talk about sports.
I like it.
Sweet. Thanks, buddy.
The weekends in the ATL are busy, and there's always plenty of sports to talk about.
Radio on the weekends.
And that's what we're going to do.
Hell yes, we are.
This is the ATL Show, keeping you up to date on all the sports in Atlanta and beyond.
Sports don't stop, even on the weekends. The ATL Show with Abe Gordon is on.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Now, here's Abe.
Welcome on into the Abe TL Show here on a Saturday afternoon. Had to miss college football game time this morning because of the polar opposite 10K running right through Midtown here. Right out this window, actually. And I told Mike Conti, get me on the air. I got stuff to say here. And we've got a lot to discuss. Obviously, on the heels of the college football playoffs, the semifinals are set. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. Atlanta Falcons headed towards week 18. And a lot to discuss. And I've heard a lot of interesting debate and discussion over the course of this week. Our buddy Caleb, even just a couple of minutes ago, is week 18 meaningless? How much does this go into the decision regarding our GM and head coach and all sorts of angles? We're going to break it down as best that I can. As well, it seems interesting. It's a very split fan base about the future. There's a fair shake of people who say, "Hey, it's been 2 years, man. Like, let's continue to give this guy a chance. Was this year really that bad? If you win on Sunday, was it really that bad?" Yeah, I think so. By the way. But then there's also a lot of people who's like, well, it's not going to get better, not with this guy. And so it's time to make change either way. We'll try and decipher all of it and what tomorrow might mean ultimately for the future of the Atlanta Falcons. We're going to do that at 4:40, so plenty of time coming. We've got a pair of games today with heavy playoff implication. This first one kicking off in just a little bit at 4:30 here. The Panthers down in Tampa. Looks like a little bit of rain down there, too, to take on the Buccaneers. Biggest game in at least the NFL career of Bryce Young. I'm not going to lie. I am rooting for Tampa in this one because I love the idea of the Falcons holding the NFC South in their hands tomorrow. And I don't really have a preference. Actually, I would like to see Carolina advance into the playoffs. I would like to see them advance in the playoffs courtesy of a Falcons win over the Saints. But I want to go into tomorrow with both teams having to either, I mean, Tampa obviously wouldn't be rooting for us, but I want to go in tomorrow with Carolina, the Panthers, and their fan base having to go all in on the Falcons. I think that would be quite enjoyable. And so we'll see over the course of this show how it plays out. Again, it's Abe Gordon here on a Saturday afternoon here with you until 7 p.m. No guess either. I got a full rundown here. We're going to break it all down. Week 18. And I got to address the Georgia fans in here as well. We're going to do that more specifically at 5:20. Georgia eliminated from the college football playoffs for the second straight year at the Sugar Bowl. Second time they've gone there off of a bye, unable to get a victory. And we'll talk about that because I've heard a couple people who maybe are keeping it in perspective, but for the most part, it seems like the fan base and even some analysts and media members are calling this a failed season for the Georgia Bulldogs. And I understand the bias. I understand that to an extent. But I think you got to take a step back and look at things from a different angle. We'll talk about that a little bit later as well. Before we really get into the meat of the show, including the college football quarterfinals, not just the Georgia game, but all of them, let me just talk to the Indiana people here. And those of you who have listened to this show long enough know I am an Indiana alum. I am also a Florida Gator fan. I grew up rooting for Florida. My dad rooted for Florida, so I grew up rooting for the Gators. But for college, I went to Indiana. They were not good at either sport at the time that I was there. But I've always kept an eye on Indiana. And I have some people like, well, you don't even root for Indiana. I was like, no, I watch them. I've watched them for years. There hasn't been much to publicly discuss regarding Indiana. And that goes for basketball, too. Traditionally a basketball school. So, yes, I am rooting for Indiana quite heavily. I have had so many of my old classmates or friends from college reach out to me, be like, yo, you work in radio, right? Let me get them tickets. And I'm like, yo, it's been 20 years and you still don't know what I do for a living. I don't just get tickets. You think I can just walk into Mike Conley's office, you got a stack of Peach Bowl tickets? I can just take them? So no, if there's any of my Indiana friends here in the Atlanta area listening, I cannot get you tickets. I have made a couple of efforts to see if I can maybe find someone willing to, face value for you. That's about as far as I could go, though. So please do not reach out to me asking me if I can get you tickets. The answer is no. I'm sorry, but I cannot. College basketball underway. We got to talk about what happened to the Georgia Bulldogs today. A fascinating finish in a game against Auburn. We'll discuss that at some point today as well. I do want to give a shout out to the Harvey last night in Chamblee. First time I had been there, I was there hosting an Atlanta Hawks watch party at the Harvey. Really cool spot. It's a spot I definitely got to go back to when I get back to, imbibing. I'm taking 2 months off of drinking for marathon training. So it's a dry January and then a dry February marathon right here in Atlanta, Publix, March 1st. And I might be drunk on March 2nd. I know it's a Monday, but, who knows? We'll see. But I definitely want to go back and check out the Harvey on my own time. But really cool spot to host the Hawks watch party last night. Hawks, obviously, did the dang thing as well, which made it a little bit better. 111-99 over the Knicks. No Trae Young, unfortunately, in Madison Square Garden, but the rest of the boys did the job all the same. It's their second straight win coming off of that 7-game losing streak. But the Harvey had some cool drinks going on there. More importantly, the pizza. And I got to bring in Josh. I promise we will talk sports, but I do like food as well. Maybe not as much a steak. I'm certainly no expert, but the pizza at the Harvey, Josh, and let's not get too complicated with pizza, right?
Okay, sure.
It was just a regular pizza. It was a pepperoni pizza, whatever.
Yep.
Traditional
crust,
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. What makes, because it's very hard to screw up pizza where it's bad. I mean, you could burn pizza, obviously.
Yes, absolutely.
But it's really hard to just completely screw up pizza. And as I was eating the pizza from the Harvey yesterday, I was thinking to myself, this is a dang good pizza. And I was trying to diagnose why I thought it was so good. And so you're dealing with limited ingredients here. So for you, Josh, what makes a pizza good or better than your average other place?
Well, for me, I have a particular style of pizza that I really enjoy.
Okay.
There is a chain here that there's a few locations here around the metro Atlanta area. They serve a particular style of pizza. It's Detroit-style pizza. And,
oh, boy. Hey,
just listen here.
Wearing that stupid beanie.
Hey, listen here, okay?
You're no better than Chicago. You know that?
No, damn the Chicago pizza. Okay, that's a casserole. All right,
it is a casserole.
I don't
want to
hear nothing about no Chicago pizza.
I agree.
That is
a
dang casserole.
I agree with you.
But
ours in the casserole. Can we put the sauce on top?
But I do love Detroit style because you have that crispy exterior to the crust, and you have that crispy bottom, but you still have the lightness of kind of that top layer of dough. So
and here's where Detroit and definitely Chicago, which I agree is just a casserole, it's just too much dough, too much.
It's
crust.
Way too much dough.
It's too much crust for Detroit style. But I think you are actually headed in the same direction that I was headed, and I think for as much as and look, You might be an enjoyer of extra cheese or light cheese, extra sauce, medium sauce, light sauce, whatever. I think at the end of the day, whatever your preference is, if you like deep dish, that's fine. If you like thin, that's fine. Crispy, whatever, pan taut, whatever. I think the quality of a crust is ultimately what makes a pizza.
I don't want to pick my piece up and have it collapse. Like, if I can hold it. Well, I know what I'm saying. You can fold it, but if I pick it up and it just flops over,
yeah.
Like, I want a nice, I guess, solid base on my crust. I want that yeah. rigidness of it.
And I understand that, too. I'm just saying, I was eating the pizza yesterday from the Harvey, and again, appreciate them making that for me and hosting us for the Hawks Watch Party. There's another Hawks Watch Party coming this Friday that I'll be hosting. Hudson Grill right here in Midtown. So come on out Friday. It's a little bit later. They're faced in, I think, Denver. So there you go. But the crust, I think, is the difference. And the sauce and the cheese, again, I think those are mostly preferences. Quality crust, I think, makes a difference in a pizza. So there you go. All right. The polar opposite, 10K, was this morning. Shout out to Matt, by the way. We have a listener, Matt, who, after we crossed the finish line, we had just gotten our sweatshirts for you know, finishing shirts. And he's like, Abe? I'm like, yeah, it's me. He's like, oh, great job today, man. Good race. And appreciate the radio. Listen all the time. He also lives not far from me in Dunwoody, which is cool. But I don't get recognized that often, like, not at a company event, like not at a 92.9, either like a Hawks Watch Party or something, you know, an Andy and Randy remote. And so that was really cool. And I have talked about, because I never know how people recognize me. Like, I don't even know if I have a photo on our website. In fact, I'm almost positive I don't have a photo on the website or app. Now, there's a chance he, you know, just follows me on Twitter. And maybe just kind of recognize
me from
there.
It's got to be a social media follow. Well, unless you had like a shirt on that says, well, I'm Abe Gordon.
So I don't have that on, but I have talked about the Dunwoody Roadrunners, which is my run club. And anyone who lives in Dunwoody or Chamblee, Brookhaven, the surrounding areas, you're all welcome to come hang out and join the run club. But I do wear the Dunwoody Roadrunner shirt. And so that's the second time I've just been running and someone's like, Abe? Because it happened a couple years ago mid-race. Like, I was dying up a hill, and the guy's passing me. He's like, is that you? Like, it's me. He's like, great job. I'm like, not as good as you, man. You're zooming by me. But really nice of Matt to stop and say hi. It also made me feel good because another member of the run club was standing next to me, and they were like, oh, my local celebrity, you know, getting recognized out here. The run was great. A lot of people today were happy at the temperature. 50-something degrees, which it was 28 degrees last year for this race. I could have used about 15 degrees colder. I could have used 28 degrees or something. I was starting to struggle coming up the hill, but really happy with my time. My goal was to break 50. I squeaked by 50, and I'm really, really happy about that. So there you go. Miami, Oregon, Indiana, Ole Miss. That is your college football semifinal playoff field. Indiana and Oregon have already met once this year. They're going to rematch, and Miami and Ole Miss are going to be getting going as well. They're in the Fiesta Bowl, Indiana and Oregon, right here in the Peach Bowl. We're going to talk about these games on the other side. What we saw from the quarterfinal matchups, I think for the most part there was a relatively common thread between all four of these games. And no, the threat is not the teams off a bye or the teams that have already played. We got to move past that, guys. I just don't think that's why the results last year or this year ended up where they were. But we'll talk about the college football playoffs. Plenty of Falcons discussion coming your way as well. So make sure to stay tuned. We're also about 15, 16 minutes away from kickoff in that NFC South, a game that could decide the division title, the Panthers at the Buccaneers. We got it on TV here. We're going to keep an eye on that. If you are listening and tuning in right now and trying to find that game, the Carolina and Tampa Bay game, or Seattle San Fran tonight. Both of those can be found on WAOK. So I apologize if you tuned in for NFL play-by-play. You're stuck with me for a couple more hours, but you can find that on our sister station, WAOK. But I implore you to stick right here. I'll make sure you're up to date on what's going on in that game and all the others, including Georgia Tech, Boston College, in college basketball action right now as well. But when we come back, we're going to talk college football. Probably my first love. Probably my first love. We're gonna get into it on the other side. It's the Abe TL Show. Abe Gordon here live in the Kia Studios till 7 o'clock right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game in the Odyssey app.
Hello there.
More of the Abe TL Show.
Your every man's dream.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back into the Abe TL Show. Abe Gordon here hanging out with you until 7 p.m. on a Saturday afternoon. It'll turn to evening by the time we wrap up off the air. And we're dialing it in for a pair of divisional battles in the NFL. NFC South, the Panthers at the Buccaneers. That's coming up in a little bit. And then we've got the NFC West as well, Seahawks and 49ers. That one's going to kick shortly after 8 o'clock tonight. And that one's for the number one seed in the NFC. And that one is fascinating for a number of reasons. A lot of things are up for air in that game. I think Offensive Player of the Year could be decided in that game, potentially between two of the guys, both McCaffrey and Jackson Smith and Jigba. I think Coach of the Year is up for grabs. That one could be between Shanahan and who knows who else. So a lot going on there. Really excited. Really good final week, regular season week in the NFL. A lot of games with a lot of meetings. So we'll talk about that in a little bit. We are one step closer to the college football playoff final. And we have eliminated four more teams over the past couple of days on Wednesday night and Thursday. And we'll just kind of go in order here real quick and then break down the games a little bit different in just a moment. Miami and Ohio State in the Cotton Bowl. Miami won 24-14. Defense in that one, five sacks and an interception. A pick six. Two interceptions, sorry, but one of them was a pick six. Oregon and Texas Tech, 23-0 in the Orange Bowl. Oregon's defense, four sacks and four turnovers forced. Alabama and Indiana, this one was all IU out there in the Rose Bowl. 38-3, and Fernando Mendoza, coming off the Heisman, looked like it. 14-16, 192, three passing touchdowns. No answer, Alabama defensively for Indiana. Or offensively, for that matter. They scored 3 points. And then the Sugar Bowl, as you guys already know, Ole Miss and Georgia. Ole Miss wins 39-34 because of that late safety. Not 37-34, 39-34. Trinidad Chambliss, 362 yards and two touchdowns. And let's go back to Miami for a moment. This is a team that there was a serious debate about Miami and whether they belonged in. Right, they finished third in the ACC. I think they finished third. There might have been some other tiebreakers, but certainly didn't make the ACC conference championship game, which was ultimately won by Duke over Virginia. And Miami sneaks in, and I think they were, in my opinion, quite lucky to get in. But that didn't mean they didn't have quality enough to do what they've been doing. You guys got to remember, and I know Miami had some slip-ups in games that they shouldn't be slipping up, but there's a stretch at the start of this year, before their first loss, where they were the number one team in the country and viewed that way. They stumbled a little bit. Carson Beck had some bad games. People kind of forgot about them in that discussion. Hey, we sit there and say, oh, you know, Reuben Bain on defense might be the best pass rusher. Where's he going to go in the draft? And Malachi Toney, you know, he's a pretty good freshman. I can't believe he skipped a year and is really just turned 18. All that stuff. That's a good team. And they showed it against Ohio State, a team that won all their games up until these final two. The Big Ten title game, a loss to Indiana, where they were shown not to be what they maybe looked like. And then again, you know, and the thing about Ohio State, coming off of last year in which you lost that game to Michigan and then steamrolled right through the playoffs, A lot of people were wondering if that could happen again. Is this team still as talented? Are they one of the best teams in the country? And Miami just took it to them. And you turn the page on Friday night from Miami to the early game on Saturday. Texas Tech and Oregon. And Oregon wins 23-0. Oregon's a team that probably has been slept on a little bit. They got beat at home by 10 to Indiana, a game in which a pick six gave Oregon a lead. Not deep in the game, but deep enough to where you thought maybe they had this game. And they just took it to Texas Tech. The Oregon defense was all over it. And I don't know if Baron Morton was really affected by the pressure or it was just an off day, but it was bad for the Texas Tech quarterback. And here's the thing that I at least saw between Miami and Oregon, and Indiana for that matter. And Indiana wins 38-3. We'll talk about that in a moment. The three winners of these three games, Indiana, Oregon, and Miami, they were the three more physical teams in this game. Now, I don't look at the game in which Georgia lost to Ole Miss and say that the team that physically dominated both lines of scrimmage won that game. I don't think Georgia got dominated physically. I don't think they dominated physically. I think it was a fair play all around. But Indiana dominated Alabama physically. Oregon dominated Texas Tech, especially defensively. And Miami dominated on both sides of the ball against Ohio State. The more physical team won the game. And as much as we want to make it about quarterback play, and as much as we want to make it about explosives and receivers making great catches, whatever you want it to be, Old Faithful came back and showed you what still matters, and I think it still matters in the NFL too. Old Faithful came back and reminded you at the front and back of it is trench play. The offensive line and the defensive line can impact the game as much, if not more, than any other individual player. Any Heisman you want to throw at me, any receiver that's going to be a top five pick you want to throw at me, Jeremiah Love, quality running back, it's all about the trenches still. And I think for Indiana, Oregon, and Miami, they dominated on both sides of the ball. And again, maybe a little less offensively for Oregon, but they did more than enough given the short field that their defense put them in a couple of times. Now for Georgia, I wouldn't say they got dominated or dominated. It was neither one. I think they had some big moments and Ole Miss had some big moments. I will say this. In the moments that Georgia did win up front defensively, Trinidad Chambliss rose to the occasion. I think we saw him extend plays with his legs to get the ball downfield multiple times. And the Georgia pass rush, which was very quiet early in the season, started to ramp up the last five or six games, really was held too much in check in this one. Again, partially by the Ole Miss O-line and partially by Trinidad Chambliss being able to move around, avoid rushers, and get the ball out to avoid negative plays. And so it's Miami and Ole Miss in the Fiesta Bowl and Oregon and Indiana right here in the Peach Bowl. Can all four of these teams win the national championship? I think you look at the 12-team playoff field, right? And you circle a number of teams and say, this is not a team that can win the national championship. With respect to the group of fives, James Madison, Tulane, those were two teams that could not win the national championship. In my opinion, and mine alone, Texas A&M was not a team that could win the national championship. I thought Miami could. I thought Ohio State could. I thought Georgia could. Thought Indiana could. Wasn't sold on Alabama. I would have circled Alabama and say this is not a team that could win the national championship. Couldn't get the run game going. Certainly couldn't against Indiana, but they also couldn't against Georgia in the SEC championship game. Ole Miss, though. Ole Miss is a team I would have circled. Between what went down with head coach Lane Kiffin leaving Ole Miss, some of the potential disarray that they may still have ultimately, and we'll talk about that when we go outside the perimeter, because it's a mess in the coaching box right now. We'll detail that more. I would have circled Ole Miss as a team that cannot win the national championship. Now, a lot of that, in my opinion, had to do with their path going through Georgia. I didn't think they were going to beat Georgia. I didn't really see a way. But that's why you play the games. But with four teams left, who can actually win this thing, the whole thing? Can Miami? I think so. I think a front-to-back, absolutely dominant effort against Ohio State tells you that they can win it all. Can Indiana? I think so. They're the only undefeated left. They've been the best team in the country all year. They have a Heisman Trophy winning quarterback. They have a head coach that the moment is not too big for. And by the way, and I don't know when we have the discussion for Kurt Cignetti. I don't know where he falls right now in best head coaches in college football, but it's not far down that list. And if you want to sit here and tell me that what he's done, he's only done for a year and most of a second year now, I understand. But I'll tell you what, I think in terms of the focus, and I don't even mean game day head coach. I mean getting his team prepared for everything that you've got to handle before the snap of the first play. He's got his team's full focus. And he's on a very short list, in my opinion, still behind Kirby Smart at the top. But he's on a very short list. A list, by the way, that might include Dan Lanning. Oregon, can they win it all? It's the team that lost the initial matchup at home to Indiana by 10. And quite honestly, a couple of Indiana mistakes made this game a lot closer than 10, or feel closer. I mean, it felt like Indiana was in real control down the stretch of that game. But that Oregon team, defensively, that faced Texas Tech, that wasn't the team Indiana faced a number of months ago. They look like a whole different beast. And my hesitancy with Oregon all year had been the injuries to the wide receiving core. They have found a way past that. But not only that, there is a good chance that one of the players for Oregon who was supposed to be their top receiver this year, for the first time all year, in the semifinals, is available. Evan Stewart went down over summer, and I thought to myself, that's it for Oregon. That's it. Now, I didn't know what Dante Moore was going to be or become, but when Evan Stewart went down, and they had lost another freshman to injury as well, but when Evan Stewart went down, who, in my opinion, was one of the top playmakers returning in the country, I said, that's it for Oregon. They're probably going to be good. They'll probably make the playoffs. I don't think they can win it. With the defense playing the way that they played, with the potential return of Evan Stewart, I do think Oregon can win it. Again, as an Indiana alum, with a game right here in our backyard, I hope not. But I do. And that brings me back to Ole Miss. I still am not sold on Ole Miss. And a lot of that has to do with we probably put Georgia on too much of a pedestal the last four or five games. And I think this rematch with Ole Miss kind of reminded me why I had doubts about Georgia to begin with. I think Georgia gets a massive benefit of the doubt because of Kirby Smart. There were weaknesses up and down this roster all year long. They found ways to hide them down the stretch against Alabama, against Texas, against Georgia Tech. But in the biggest game of the season in the playoffs when it mattered, I think some of those problems crept back up. They weren't able to get the job done along the front defensively in the pass rush. And the back end gave up one or two more big plays than they could afford. So can Ole Miss still win this thing? As of right now, I would say yes, they can. Let's find out, though, exactly what goes down with the coaching staff and the members who are joining Lane Kiffin at LSU, because that could still change things. We'll talk about that when we go outside the perimeter. The game that could decide the NFC South is now underway. Just getting started. Carolina Panthers at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Tampa gets the ball first. And again, that game, if you're trying to find it, is on our sister station, WAOK. But if the Panthers lose today, the NFC South comes down to tomorrow and the Saints and Falcons. We're going to talk about the Atlanta Falcons coming up. Tomorrow's the final day of the NFL regular season, which means the day after is Black Monday in the NFL. Is that going to be news-breaking time for the Atlanta Falcons? Should it be? We'll talk about that and a couple of other Falcons stuff on the other side. It's Abe Gordon. I got Josh Hagedorn with me as well. The Abe TL Show on till 7 on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game in the Odyssey app.
Hello there.
More of the Abe TL Show.
Your everyman's dream.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back in as we head towards home on the first hour here of the Abe TL Show. Plenty of hours left, though. And got NFL football going on right here. Got a little bit of college basketball action as well. We'll give you an update on the Panthers and Bucks in just a moment. The NFL Network is doing something real cruel right now. And before you say, well, were they showing the Falcons-Patriots Super Bowl? Not that cruel, but they're showing what I'm assuming was from earlier this year, the Seahawks and 49er game. And it's just like, why are we doing that? Like, why are we confusing people? Any other game. But that's a game that's literally being played in a couple of hours. And if you don't have your time cues focused, maybe you think this is what's live. It does say, like, on the thing where it says Fox NFL, like, 2025 week. I can't see what week it is. 1, 7, 3, whatever it is. But still, show a different game. In the meantime, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have taken their opening drive and marched down the field. And courtesy of Cade Otton from Baker Mayfield, taking a touchdown lead in a game that could decide the NFC South. Of course, that also could be left up to the Atlanta Falcons tomorrow. Unfortunately, not on their own behalf, but in the situation in which Tampa wins today, the Falcons, as you all know, would determine with a win, Tampa goes with a loss. With a win, the Panthers would go. With a loss, it would be Tampa. And I mentioned it to start the show. That's what I'm rooting for. I want Tampa to win today so both of those teams and both of those fan bases have to sit and watch Falcons and Saints tomorrow at Mercedes-Benz Stadium either pulling for or against. I want them to have to be dialed in to Saints-Falcons. The only frustrating thing about it is that this is not a game that can send the Falcons to the playoffs. And that is the most, honestly, and I don't want to use the term heartbreaking, and I've used the word frustrating so much the past 2 months, 2.5 months in regards to this season. But I just don't know a better word than frustrating. And at some point tomorrow, the season for the Atlanta Falcons will wrap up. And decision will be made. The question is whether action will or will not be taken. And, of course, I'm referring to Raheem Morris. And I kind of believe Terry Fontenot is grouped in there. And one of the questions that we're kind of stuck answering is how much does this final stretch of the year, how much does it or should it matter to Arthur Blank? for the purposes of this segment, let's play under the assumption that the Falcons beat a Saints team that does not have Chris Olave tomorrow. For the purposes of this discussion, let's presume the Falcons end the year on a high note, running off four straight wins, maybe even finishing second in the NFC South at 8-9. Okay? How much should that matter to the decision that's facing Arthur Blank? The argument would be that this team did not quit on Raheem Morris. They are professionals. They are paid as such. I do not find that impressive. I'm sorry, I don't. And if you want to argue and suggest other teams have quit this year, we've seen it. I think to an extent the Jets have quit. I think to an extent the Dolphins have quit. And there's probably one or two other teams that you could make that argument for. Tough for them. Apologies if I'm not impressed that the guys are out there still trying to do their job. You know, a number of years back when I was working for SiriusXM, I was leaving the company to take a job in Cleveland. I'd given my 2 weeks notice and I was working those 2 weeks. Within those 2 weeks came the end of the athletic calendar in college. And so what did I do? For the first time in SiriusXM college history, I put together a complete recap of the entire championship results for every sport in college, men's and women's. It was the hardest show to produce in that station's history. It took more work to produce that 1 3-hour special than probably a week or two's worth of any other show. And I was already leaving the company. Could I have mailed it in? Done the bare minimum? I could have, but that's not me. That's not how I work. It's not how my brain thinks. It's not how I grind. And so again, pardon me if I'm not impressed that the team didn't quit on Raheem or that they're still playing tough. It's what they do. That's their job. Now, partially different discussion is the team is learning how to win. And while I think that's important for the players, especially young players, it would have been a different situation if we had Michael Penix and it's a young quarterback learning how to get it done. I'm not impressed that a head coach that has gone 4-0 over the course of this stretch against a Bucs team that has been in a complete free fall, a Cardinals team that we know is not good, and again, for the sake of this conversation, tomorrow is a win against the Saints team that has improved over the course of the year, but also ultimately, if the Falcons beat them tomorrow, finish dead last in this conference. And you might say, well, what about the Rams win? Again, apologies if you don't stand where I stand on this. I'm not exactly giving credit to this team for, quote, learning how to win a game in which you were up 24-3. Only to see it tied down the stretch. That's not the same as closing out a game. It was happenstance that you got the ball last. And a veteran quarterback and other players did their jobs. It was a good win, and that's cool. You blew a 3-touchdown lead. So let's keep that in check a little bit. The defense played well, did some things that only Matt Stafford had only done essentially one other game this year in terms of three interceptions and ended his MVP campaign, potentially. Who knows what tomorrow holds for him and Drake May and anyone else in the discussion. And so it's nice to close 4-0. Does that mean you start next year hot? Does it carry over? You guys want to go back to Dan Quinn's final season and the year prior? Deep dive if you think it still carries over? I asked Randy McMichael, I was lucky enough to have the opportunity to host with him earlier this week, and I asked him just point blank, do you feel, as a former football player, as a former teammate, as a guy in those teams, is there carryover? Is there momentum year one to year two? And before my guy Yo tweets at me, I'm not suggesting there's no growth on the team, but I don't think closing a year out 4-0 means you're starting the next year 4-0. There's a long history, not just here in Atlanta, everywhere, college, pro, everywhere. There's a long history of keeping guys around when you probably should fire him, only to then have to fire him, what, 5 games into the season next year? Or in college, 3 games into the season the next year? Or in week 10 as you hit your bye week? There's a long history of knowing you should fire a guy, bringing him back for whatever reason, and then having to fire him. I think we saw that with the Florida Gators and Billy Napier. Everyone knew he should be fired. He wasn't good enough to do it. Had his job, kept DJ Lagway. They finished out the year strong last year. Fell off a cliff. I don't buy the momentum either. And so, ultimately, the question that Arthur Blank has to deal with is, in my opinion, and I know you don't look at this season standalone, you have to also input on last season and what happened in Raheem Morris' first year with the Falcons. What was the goal this season? Realistically, what was the goal? And did you meet it? How short did you come from it? You win tomorrow, you finish 8-9. I know Vegas puts you there, and if you want to believe Vegas and their win total, that's fine. I think winning the NFC South this year was a realistic goal, even more so when you see what this division has become. Right? There was a time where you're like, man, the Bucs might go 13-4 this year. You're never going to win the division with that team anyways. They've fallen off a cliff. It was winnable. It was so winnable that just this week, in a holiday week when most guys are off and maybe you don't have your regular guest interviews or whatever, just this week, multiple times, different national analysts on our station, on 92.9, came on our shows. Mark Schlereth did it with the middays. I think it was Frank Schwab did it with Turtle while he was filling in for Steakhouse. I heard some others doing it. Multiple analysts could not believe, after watching the Falcons beat the Rams on Monday Night Football, that this team was not able to win this division. Both of those guys said, far and away the most talented team in the NFC South, the best team in the NFC South. And if they lose tomorrow, they finish dead last in the division. Dead last. So the question that Arthur Blank is faced with is, how close? Because the team fell short of the goal. I think we all understand that. How short did you come? And is that impacted by the other teams in the division and some of the issues they had? If someone was going to win this division at 10-7, do you feel differently about how short you fell at 8-9? I do, and I'll tell you why. Because you lost winnable games for a variety of reasons. You lost winnable games for a variety of reasons. And I have three different reasons that further complicate the decision. Who is really to blame for what this Falcon season has been? That's the other aspect that Arthur Blank has to figure out before making his decision Sunday night or Monday morning. And that's where the problem lies. It would be so simple to point your finger at one guy in another situation. To just point your finger at Raheem Morris and his coaching and preparation. I'll tell you why you can't do that. In other situations, it would be so simple to point your finger at the players. Michael Penix, Bijan Robinson, Kyle Pitts, Drake London. You can't do that. It's not on them either. We're going to continue a little bit of this discussion. Who's really to blame? And how does Arthur Blank come to terms with the decision when it's just so muddy? We'll talk about that on the other side. If you want to get a call in and maybe share some thoughts on this decision that is coming one way or another, keep or get rid of, it's coming either way. 404-726-0929. We may take a call or two on the other side as well. It's Abe Gordon, the Abe TL Show. We're going to continue talking Falcons ahead of Week 18 against the Saints. Coming up next, the 5 o'clock hour on the way in about 5 minutes on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game in the Odyssey app.